This weekend, police in three states arrested men they suspect were planning mass shootings. This comes as momentum builds for the federal government and law enforcement to crack down on white supremacist violence and threats of violence. After the El Paso massacre, Texas Governor Greg Abbott says he's forming a task force to proactively seek, assess, and monitor domestic terrorism threats. And President Trump has said he will give the FBI whatever it needs to combat domestic terrorism. But what does it mean to seek, assess, and monitor? How are the FBI's resources currently being used in this effort? Faiza Patel is co-director of the Brennan Center for Liberty and National Security. She's also testified before Congress opposing the dragnet surveillance of Muslims. Faiza, welcome.
Thank you.
Before we start, can you clarify for us the current federal laws on the books for fighting domestic terrorism?
So there are a number of laws on the books that can be used to prosecute somebody for domestic terrorism. We've cataloged at the Brennan Center 52 separate laws that can be used to prosecute domestic terrorists. In addition, there are five federal hate crimes laws. States have their own hate crimes laws for the most part. And the federal government also has access to broad conspiracy statutes where more than one person is involved in carrying out an act of violence. So there's a range of laws that can be used to prosecute domestic terrorism. In addition, I think one of the main issues is about how you investigate domestic terrorism and how do you monitor it and how do you keep track of it. And I think there's a couple of issues over there that are really important to clarify. So the one is that since 9/11, the FBI has been given very broad authority to carry out investigations even when it doesn't have suspicion of criminal activity. It needs only to have an authorized purpose, and surely preventing violence by somebody who wants to shoot up a synagogue or a mosque or, I guess, a Walmart is plenty of authorized purpose for the FBI to investigate. And the FBI has used this authority very aggressively when it came to disrupting Al-Qaeda, ISIS type of plots, and some would say even too aggressively.
You mentioned all of the foundational laws that are already in place to help in fighting domestic terrorism. So your argument is that the FBI should not beef up its resources, but use the resources that are already in place. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. So the FBI has some, from our last statistics that we have, has some, 2,000 plus agents assigned to counterterrorism. And of those agents, around 300, based on the last numbers we have, are assigned to look at domestic terrorism. And so that tells you how much priority the FBI has historically given to domestic terrorism. The second thing that's really relevant to this conversation is the priorities that the FBI assigns. So the FBI's number one mission, priority mission, is counterterrorism. But most domestic terrorism, particularly the white nationalist variety, gets treated as hate crimes, and that's prosecuted as a civil rights violation, which is number five on the FBI's list of priorities. So given that we've seen this apparent surge of right-wing violence over the last few years, I think it's really important for the FBI to recalibrate the resources that it already has and to make a really objective assessment of the risks that we as a nation face and where it should be spending its money and its personnel. One of the things that's really, really important when we talk about domestic terrorism is to realize that when the FBI uses the term domestic terrorism, it's referring to a range of different kinds of violent acts, right? It's not just white nationalists. It's also environmental groups who are often prosecuted for property crimes. It's also, most recently, the FBI identified black identity extremists as a potential terrorist group, which is basically another way of going after Black Lives Matter activists. And so it really is, I think, reflecting the FBI's sort of traditional hostility towards social protest movements such as the Black Lives Matter movement. So these are the kinds of things that can get hidden under a term like domestic terrorism, and people think the FBI is doing something about white nationalism, but actually it's pursuing potentially a different agenda.
Right now, everyone is talking about gun control, and oftentimes surveillance is put up against gun control. So either surveillance or gun control. Do you think there needs to be a choice made?
I think that extended surveillance is often proposed as an alternative to gun control because people don't want to do gun control. It's too hard. You have a very strong gun lobby. And so surveillance seems like an easier lift. But I think it's really important to recognize that there needs to be a lot of balance and limits when we're talking about surveillance, because surveillance can very quickly get out of hand. Surveillance authorities are exercised in secret for the most part, and they have really significant costs on a free society and our ability to speak and our ability to organize and our ability to associate. So I don't think surveillance should be increased in lieu of gun control or because we're too chicken to gun control, basically. But I do think that when you do have surveillance, and it is appropriate in many instances, it needs to be quite defined and limited, and there need to be pretty significant controls on how it's conducted.
Faiza Patel, co-director of the Brennan Center's Liberty and National Security Program. Thanks for joining us, Faiza.
My pleasure. Thank you.